Hey, welcome to the Happy Ramp Podcast. I am Ted Cluck, joined as always by my good friend and partner in radio, Ron Martin. Ronald, we are without Barnabas Piper this week. Pipe is traveling. I think he's driving with his family through the upper Midwest. So it's just you and me, baby, reformatory style today. And I just want to catch up for a minute. So how are you and where are you?
Baby, I'm good. Things are going well. It's probably weird that Barnabas is doing what I typically do, and actually what I'm getting ready to head out to do. I'm heading to Louisville and Indianapolis, of course.
Of course, baby.
But,
now,
of course I am.
Give us a little update. What's in Louis and Indy?
Well, Louis, I have some sojourn work to do in both towns.
Of course you do.
In both towns.
Baby, so, did you get any sermons in at your church, like in between Florida and this last leg of the trip?
Now, baby, I know you're going for a little ha-ha right now, and I get it, and I love it, and I appreciate it, but I'm up to five in a row right now. Five in a row.
Dude, no way. So how did you get the five in a row in? I feel like you were home for like 2 weeks, tops.
No, but I've been back for, almost a month now.
Okay.
Yeah, babe.
All right.
Yeah.
Baby,
so
how's the new neighbors?
The new neighbors are good. Just did a little lunchy lunch with one of them specifically.
Ooh.
And it was good, man. They're settling in well.
Okay.
And I think it's a good fit, man. I think they're settling in well.
Baby, now were they aware that you spend most of your time in Florida and they left Florida to come up to Ashland to see you? I feel like
we've made that joke about 16 times.
Okay, all right.
Point.
So
you know, it's,
so yeah, I'm less than original with that one. A little late to the party with that joke.
No, not at all. It's just there are some ironies going on.
There are some delicious ironies, but
delicious, beautifully delicious ironies.
Baby, what is life without a little delicious irony? And I'm excited for the show, man. I'm going to enjoy just a little Big R time to myself.
Yeah, likewise, man. It's big. It's interesting without Pipe. We're obviously not going to get the mastery of any promo.
Dude, we're not. And I'm actually going to try to fumble through one on my own, man, which is, it's kind of got me a little nerved up. I'm not going to lie.
Baby, you have some promo for us?
Baby, I got a little promo, and this is a little like kind of a nostalgic one, which is thematic because we're going to be talking about nostalgia on the program today. But I had kind of not lost touch, but I'd just been a little bit out of touch with Heck Lagaris, the great Hector Lagaris of Lagaris Coffee Roasters.
Legendary.
Yeah, legendary Heck, man. Like you, he's probably, you know, traveling all over the kind of the deep south looking for coffee beans and walking through the groves and all that. But I ran into him at church on Sunday. And he had a huge bag of coffee for me, man. He had some medium roast, some dark roast, and some tea. You're a tea drinker, right, baby?
I am, yeah.
Dude, this stuff was unbelievable. It had a little like turmeric in it, so it was kind of like,
oh, wow.
Yeah, a little honeysuckle, a little turmeric. It smelled heavenly. And
that sounds delicious. It's just so like Heck just to show up at church with a big bag.
Baby,
of
it is like Heck. I wish
it
more
is,
people
man.
Were like him. I wish I were more like him, to be honest.
Yeah, I've never even met him, and I wish I was more like him.
But here's the thing, man. I want to implore our listeners, if they haven't done so already, run, don't walk, to LagarisRoasters.com, where you can pick up a bag of Happy Rant Signature Blend. That was kind of the flagship coffee flavor that really launched Lagaris Roasters a couple years ago. So Hector and I, we were having dinner, as the legend goes. I encouraged him to start a coffee company so that he could make a blend and name it after our program. He did so, and the rest really is coffee and radio history, baby, in that we're both huge kind of multinational corporations at this point.
It's hard to remember life before Heck.
Baby, it is. It's hard to remember life before a specially branded coffee with our name on it, truly. I mean, I never in a million years dreamed that when we were doing those reformatory shows down in Fort Wayne that we would not only be radio moguls, but also coffee moguls. And it has been everything that I dreamed it would be and more. But, baby, enough about Lagaris Roasters. People should again go to LagarisRoasters.com and buy all the coffee they can handle. But we have things to talk about ourselves, and we have nostalgia to talk about. And I feel like nostalgia is a big part of our relationship. We are both Enneagram 4s, for what it's worth. We're both guys who like to look to the past a little bit. I know you enjoy that. And as we were doing our like three total texts worth of show prep, you suggested that we talk about nostalgia. And I want to know, A, what brought that about? B, like what you were consuming that made you want to talk about nostalgia? And just see what kind of headspace you're in right now.
Well, baby, I appreciate that, man. Yeah. No, I think one of, and we've talked about this, but one of the, I'm somebody that has to fight against being consumed by nostalgia, right?
Same. So yeah, same.
That's just an ongoing, like, running, you know, theme in my life.
Yeah.
Right? And we've talked about that over the years. I think even on the show a little bit.
Yeah.
But I think what's unique about it, and I know this is coming from the mouth of an Enneagram 4, but what's unique about nostalgia is whenever it seems like I try to have a conversation about that with somebody, it's either something they haven't thought a lot about, it doesn't really inform their life, or it's something that they push really hard against.
Yeah.
You know, in some really, you know, peculiar ways.
Yeah.
And so to have met you, and for us, man, we're going on, I don't know how long we've been hanging now, close to a decade.
Maybe almost a decade. And I was going to say, it's been a long time.
I know, it's insane, man. It's insane. And so, to think about some of our convos over the years that have talked about some of the things from the past that have informed us, probably in positive and negative ways, but to the point that it really kind of makes up our present reality in the ways that we look to the past to give us sort of the feeling and the hope.
Yeah.
And the kind, you know, when we start talking about nostalgia, it's something that is it's hard to articulate as much as it's hard to break away from.
Yeah, no, right? it totally is. Let me give you an example, man. This is a convo that I had with KK recently about, and she's a 7, so she's an Enneagram 7. Sevens, yeah, I think, like the future. They like to have fun. They like to, like, plan the next thing. So, and I know you don't like talking about music, but don't dwell on that element of the story. So,
no, it's good. It's good.
I started listening to the record that Weezer put out a couple of years ago that's all covers. I think it's called the Teal Album. And I was loving this record, and I played it for KK, and she was like, "This is dumb. They all sound like the originals." And I'm like, I know, like, I hadn't thought about it, but, like, that totally pleased me because it really did the right job of, like, taking me right back into the wheelhouse of where I was and what I was doing when those songs came out and kind of the feelings that they conjured up. And it did occur to me that it's because they sounded, they kind of, like, meshed so nicely with the, you know, with the originals. And her whole point was, like, why are you going to do a cover if you're not going to put your own, like, spin on it? And she has a great point, but, you know, for me, that record was all about, you know, just being immediately transported kind of back to the times and places that it conjured. And I'm wondering, like, what has done that for you lately? Like, is there anything that you've consumed, you know, movie, media, TV wise, book wise, that's sort of taken you back to that place?
Well, gosh, you know, it's so funny, baby, because, like, I totally agree with, like, I logically agree with Double K.
I do too. Yeah, like, I do too.
You know, a cover version, typically you want to take it, you want to add your own thing to it.
Yeah.
But I did, it's so funny. By the way, that Teal Album only came out like months ago. That's not even an old record.
Oh, really?
By the way.
Interesting.
Oh, yeah. It's like a newer album.
Yeah.
But what I liked about it was exactly what you said about it. Maybe it's because I'm getting older.
Yeah.
But I like the fact that when, like, they did Everybody Wants to Rule the World, it was like, except for his voice, you almost couldn't tell the difference.
Dude, exactly. Exactly.
And I just kind of, and it, like, Take On Me was identical.
Dude, Take On Me
for,
is
like,
so identical.
Yeah, and I loved it.
Yeah, me too.
I totally loved
yeah,
it.
And yeah, and I'm listening to it with Tristan, and he's super into it right now. And he's like, yeah, Dad, like, the drums are more prominent in Take On Me. And I'm like, man,
totally.
I don't know, yeah, maybe a little bit, but.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, as I was listening to the record, I just thought, like, my prevailing thought was, A, these guys must have had so much fun doing this, and B, like, they really love this music. You know, they love this music the way it was, which I think is why they tried to keep it so tight to the originals, maybe. But
yeah, and I think you just hit on something when it comes to nostalgia, is that it's almost rejecting reinvention.
Yeah, that's
in
right.
Some ways.
That's right.
Like the reinvention of our minds, which is. And, you know, I don't know if nostalgia is sort of this rose color way of looking at the past. But I think a lot of it is, like, we take what was most good, most memorable, and most memorably good.
Yeah.
And we sort of lock it into a place where it's immovable and it can't become bad. And nobody's going to be able to tweak it or change it or make it into something that is negative for
yeah,
us.
That's right.
And I think we get, like, for me, you guys know this, it's been many a ha ha on a rant episode, but like, for me, it's Christmas.
Yeah.
It was just a particular moment in my life where, like, everything was great.
Yeah.
And I know, man, I know that wasn't the case for everybody. So yeah. Again, you know, it's like pitting people's memories against other memories. I had sure. other things that people think are great that weren't great for me,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
But that was one of those things to where when I'm, you know, like if I'm reading like a corny Christmas novel or man, I'm listening to some Christmas music or I start thinking about some of the traditions that we're going to lock into here in the next few months. There's just something about that fills me with, I think, a longing that is also like, it's like a measure of joy,
yeah.
right? When you think about it, it conjures things up that deliver joy,
yeah.
you know, into the heart a little bit. I don't know.
Well, and that's the whole point. That's what it should do. And I think too, something that I thought of as you were talking was, it's a way of like ordering something that was actually disordered in real time. You know, so when I watch like a John Hughes movie, and I'm transported back into like yes. Midwestern public high school in the 80s. Like that wasn't idyllic, you know, like those moments, they weren't bad. Like I didn't have a tortured high school experience, but you know, it wasn't as idyllic as I make it when I watch the movies. But in a way it's like, I get to go back. I get to relive all the good stuff. I get to sort of see it through rose colored glasses
totally.
And I get to re-enjoy it. You know what I mean? And I think that's what nostalgia is really about. It's about re-enjoying. It's about appreciating. I think it's about feeling more at home in a different time. So I'm sitting here in my work office, and a friend of mine got me like a retro rotary dial phone because he knows I like old stuff. And like it's sitting here on my desk, and I never use it, but it's like just having it there is a comfort. You know what I mean? Because I think it's more elegant than like the current stuff, which you have to use the current stuff and you have to have an iPhone or whatever just to sort of keep pace, but
to live,
you know, like interact in any sort of a business way with anyone nowadays. But yeah, I look at the phone and it's a moment of like, I remember picking that up in my house to call my friends, to like set up movies, to, you know, to do all this stuff that was fun in the 80s. And that I no longer really have time to do anymore. So yeah, it's just a positive memory. So
yeah, and I think another great example. This just happened yesterday for me, like yeah. on that tip was. And it's funny how many things can sort of play into nostalgia. And I know that we're going to get comments about nostalgia being a very negative thing for Christians. I don't think it has to be.
Dude, really? Unpack that, man. I don't want to get you off your story, but I want to hear why we would get negative comments.
Well. Yeah, so I'll tell you what. I'll tell my story and
yeah,
then
yeah.
let's unpack that because yeah. I read an article. I think it was a TGC article years ago about like the dangers of nostalgia.
Oh my goodness, dude! Those guys yeah. ruin everything.
No, but it was funny because I was I watched you know for me a lot of it is old movies. My dad was an old movie buff.
Interesting.
And so like I was watching the other night Cat on a Hot Tin Roof with Paul Newman and Elizabeth Taylor.
Dude, you know? Paul Newman was the money.
He, like the original swinger.
Dude,
the
yeah.
original swinger.
Yeah.
The original Vince Vaughn. Right,
dude. Right, man. The line. You know, he had the quick wit. He had the good looking face. Man, that guy was a five tool player. Like there were no weaknesses in Paul Newman.
No. He was the real deal, man. I mean, he was what we'd call just like a classic. Method actor, I guess. Was that Paul Newman? I mean, just crazy.
Yeah, just a great Hollywood superstar. You know, just
know he was. I know.
And that was when they were making movies where you could just be a big movie star. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
You don't have to do social commentary and all this crap that you have to do in 2019. You could just make
yet,
a fun
like
movie.
And yet this movie was just like this. If you've never watched it, you should see it, man. There's
yeah.
so much depth and just like it's so deep. It's Burl Ives is in it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's like this massive cast for the time. But anyway, so my point with it, though, is like it's not like it's my favorite movie.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But the fact that growing up, my dad always had one of these old, he either had a baseball game or an old movie on.
Ugh.
So when an old movie is playing and just like the kind of like, you know, the kind of orchestral soundtracks
yep.
that they always have and sort of those jazzy soundtracks. This was like
yep.
1959. So they're starting to get into all that sort of swingy jazzy stuff.
Yep.
And there was just something about that. Having it on, I didn't even watch it that closely. I was doing some other things. I was kind of in and out of the living room watching it. And it just brought me back to this like this era and this time where like everything felt secure.
Yeah.
And I think nostalgia, I think what it represents for me and you, baby, is like a measure of I think childhood security.
Dude, totally. And that's what you, not to complain about our station in life, but that's what you lack when you're like a man who's our age, You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, we're trying to give that to our kids, to our wives, just to the people that we love. We're trying to, like, impart that sense of security, I guess. But yeah, I kind of miss, I miss being taken care of in that way. You know what I mean? Like, I miss my dad running everything and me kind of not having to worry about it, you know? And I think when I would listen to these Weezer covers or watch a certain kind of movie or whatever, like, yeah, it does bring you back to that moment where you feel totally safe because, like, somebody else is in charge. But, you know, just the circle of life, I guess, now we're in charge and we're providing that for others. But
yeah, and I think that's a really great point, too, because I think when we... I think there's something in, and man, we should unpack this maybe a little bit, but there's something in our water that is so drawn to having that, to having those, like, sort of those touch points of that comfort. It's really comfort. It's security.
Yeah.
How else would you describe that? I mean, it's a strange thing, really.
Yeah, it really is. And I can see, like, the more we talk about it, the more I can see, like, how the gospel coalition-y types would, like, shoot holes in what we're saying, because we're kind of talking ourselves into, like, a lack of responsibility. And if there's anything those guys love, it's being responsible and being in charge and, you know, like head of the household stuff. Like, they love that. And
well, the other, go ahead.
And to be clear, like, I don't not love it. Like, I'm not rejecting, like, my station in life. It's just, and maybe you and I just had really great childhoods. I think that could be part of it. Like, I don't have anything in my childhood to be super angsty about. So when I look back at it, it's almost 100% rose colored, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's it. I think because we're fours, we have the tendency to, we're probably more rose colory than anybody else.
Yeah.
You know, in that sense.
No, I'm real grim about the future though. How are you with the future? Like, I look into the future and I see gloom and doom for the most part.
Yeah. I don't trust the future.
Yeah. Same.
I think is what it is.
Yeah.
And I think I'm surprised. Now we're going to get in the spiritual realm a little bit with this, which is what TGC was pushing against.
Dude, yeah, and I still want to hear that TGC thing for sure.
Well, I think what it is, Big T, is that, like, it's more of a thing of you know, whether we're putting all of our hope and trust, like we're depending on something from the past to sort of inform and shape us for the present and the future, rather than just having that trust in the immovableness of God, you know. So we've created something in the past that's immovable for us, to sort of shape our thinking and our way of being. And I think what TGC, whoever wrote this article, was going to say, like, man, that's going to have you're going to reach a ceiling with that, because what happens when those memories aren't enough to sustain you?
Yeah.
And that's true. I mean, you know, so those memories can't sustain us.
Dude, they can't. But I mean, they can't sustain us any more than, like, and people use all kinds of different things to get to that feeling, though. Like, I mean, if you love basketball and you have season tickets to the Cleveland Cavaliers and you're going a couple nights every week and you look forward to it and that's your thing, like, it's serving the same purpose. You know what I mean? For us, it's just nostalgia. And I think, too, though, to put, like, a little bit finer point on it, there are people who get nostalgic for, like, oh, things were better in the 80s. Society was better. You know, Reagan was in office. Like, that's not the nature of my nostalgia at all. Like, for me, it's almost entirely aesthetic. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know. I like the cars. I like the music. I like what people were wearing. I like the way the football uniforms looked in the 80s versus how they look now. You know, I mean, it's a whole bunch of things that really don't matter at all, but that add up to, like, kind of one big thing that does matter.
And it creates a warmth inside of you.
Dude, right. And I think another big part of it, too, and this is a level that, like, KK and I have been connecting big time on lately, and I think you guys could relate to this too. Like, when you're young, family relationships have a certain kind of elegant simplicity to them that absolutely goes away when you're older. When you're older, all these life choices that we make, whether it's going to college versus not going to college, or being a Christian versus not being a Christian, or whatever, like, all these choices, how many kids you have, like, how you parent the kids that you do have, right? So all these things come into play that tend to divide, like, siblings and cousins. And by the time you get to our age, you've got all these, like, family relationships that just kind of aren't working, for lack of a better term, or even if they're not working, like, they're just like stagnant at best, you know what I mean? And
right.
So when we deep dive into this nostalgia, a lot of what we're enjoying is like the times when people just kind of threw the doors open and everybody got together and it was fun and it was lighthearted and, you know, it wasn't laden with all these differences, you know?
Yeah, I think that's a big point. I think that's a big point you're making is the fact that I think we're looking back on something that we've created almost like time capsules in our mind with,
yeah.
To where they just, they're times in our life, they are less complex times in
yeah.
our life that we can go back to and we can remember that there was a particular kind of hope for the future because a lot of it was unwritten. We didn't know what we were going to become, what we were going to be. And so it was kind of, that was kind of interlaced with just, you know, that moment in time where, you know, the world, you know, life could be anything. The world could be anything.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's because we're jaded and cynical now.
Dude,
but
I don't think so.
It does mean because we're middle-aged and like there are some things that are sort of cemented now that weren't in the past. And I think that contributes to, we look back at sort of the feeling that we had back then, knowing that there were possibilities.
Absolutely.
That, you know, truthfully now, I mean, it's like, there are certain things that you aren't going to become. There are certain things
absolutely.
I'm not going to become. And so there's a difference in how we view the future
mm-hmm.
and not even based on the past, but just based on what we would call reality.
Dude, it's almost like a complete 180 from what it used to be where, even when you're young and you're like newly married, I know you and Double M got married young. We did too.
Yeah.
Like there was a sense of, man, we could live anywhere. And like every time we would watch a movie, it'd be like, oh, that city looks cool. We should live there or whatever, you know? And life was just one big set of like dreams flying at you. Whereas now the reality is we don't want to live everywhere. Like we basically want to live where we live. We have lived a bunch of cool places, but we're kind of done doing that, you know, done in a good
yeah.
way of being in that phase. And we're super stoked about our church and we want to be there forever and all that. But like, but yeah, it does eliminate that whole kind of big sector of dreaming. Same thing vocationally, you know, I think your 20s are filled with like, almost limitless possibilities of what you could become vocationally. Now it's the inverse, right? It's like, basically I just want to keep doing this and I'll be really freaked out if I can't, you know? I don't know. It's a weird headspace to be in. And for me, it kind of colors how I consume all of my media because in my 20s, listening to music was about dreaming, watching movies was about dreaming. And now like, it's almost flipped in that the best movie is the nostalgic movie. You know what I mean? The best movie is the movie that takes me back to either a place we lived or a place we traveled, or same thing with music. I don't know. Are you that way too?
Yeah. You know, it's so funny. It goes, man, it's so interesting you talk about this because I've been having conversations about this for a while now. And I think one of the things I mentioned earlier was that one of the things about watching, listening, doing things in terms of like, man, I love this song, I'm watching this movie, or I'm pursuing this pursuit, in terms of like it being a dream, is because when you were younger, there were so many things that were unwritten in your life. And so there was sort of like a hope that
yeah.
pervaded everything. I think one of the dangers is that as you get to a certain age, and what comes with age is realization to where, hey, I'm never going to attain that. I'm not going to achieve that. Or man, I thought I may have had the talent to do that. I didn't. It turns out I didn't.
Yeah,
I wasn't all
right.
that.
That's
you
right.
know. And so there's kind of like these realities and realizations that come into your life, you know, when you're in your 40s. And I think it can dampen hope down because it's a different kind of hope that
yeah.
you need to have now than you did when you were in your 20s. But I also think it can eliminate hope altogether. And so I've been thinking through these ideas about, man, what does it mean now to have hope? And how does my hope need to change so that it's maybe even a better hope than it was back in my 20s when it was so laced with dreaming and probably
yeah.
a lot of unrealistic things that were never going to come true?
Yep.
How can hope be sort of like re-envisioned now to where it actually has better legs to it?
Well, dude,
you know
I,
what I'm saying?
I do. I totally know what you're saying. And I think when it's working, right? So when we're doing this well as Christian people, the ceiling is actually pretty high for hope. Like, so I can go to the theater, I can watch the movie about Freddie Mercury, and I can enjoy it while at the same time knowing beyond a shadow of a doubt, like, I'm never, like, my band is never going to be that big, right? Like, or I'm never going to sell a book that's going to make me that famous, or I'm never really going to write a movie even that's going to be that big, but I can enjoy the people that do. I can enjoy their stories. I can be thankful for, you know, just all the blessings that the Lord has given. And it's not like a consolation prize, you know what I mean? And a lot of Christians who are our age talk about it like, well, I may not have the money or the fame or the creative outlet, but I've, you know, I've got my old wife Midge and my 11 kids and, you know, like we're barely making it, but we're happy. And it's like, eh, are you really? You know? But I think you can say those things and truly mean them. You know what I mean? And it's almost like I've almost surprised myself with that where, I don't know, I watch a movie like A Star Is Born and I'll walk out of it and I'll go, man, that was awesome. I'm really like pumped for whoever wrote that. But I'm really glad that's not my life, you know, and I can identify a lot of things in it that would probably be, you know, pitfalls or invitations to sin or whatever. And I can go, I really am like thrilled and thankful for the life that I have, even though it doesn't look like the life that I would have dreamed about when I was 22.
Yeah, and I think that's well said, Big T. I think that's maturity, and I think it's I think that the danger is that we can fall into cynicism. We can turn into it is what it is, people.
Yeah. Oh, that's right.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is really contrary to the gospel, right? Because the gospel means that like we are always moving towards glory, right? So we are moving towards like our greatest hope being realized and fulfilled.
Yeah.
And so I think that's where we can have a healthy nostalgia, but we also got to make sure we have one foot out of it.
Yeah.
So that we don't become it is what it is, and everything great was in my past.
Yeah.
And the future is, you know, we're not. You know, the future is just it's you know, it's dim, it's dark. I don't enjoy it. Those are probably just struggles we're going to have to work through and be conscientious of because that's how we're wired.
Yeah.
You know.
I think
but,
so.
But I think knowing that and understanding that means that we can, I think, in a godly way, enjoy some of the good memories that we had from the past that can actually enhance our future rather than make us believe that there's nothing left to dream for or hope in.
Dude, let me tell you a thing I struggle with, though, about guys like guys our age and a little bit older. So I was literally, it's so funny. I was just having this convo with a lady that I work with up here in the office, and we were talking, and I was like, I feel like I'm the only middle-aged man in our metro area who's not like a slumlord. You know what I mean? Like all these guys, like their big hobby is buying rental properties and like leasing them to people. And like, it's the thing that guys my age get super pumped about. Like, I bought this house and I'm going to flip it and I'm going to rent it to poor people. And you know, like they get super pumped. It's their thing. And I'm like, I don't know, man. That's weird. I mean, it's just I'm fine with you doing that, and God bless you to do it. I hope it's successful, but it's like, I can't imagine getting excited about it.
Totally.
And maybe that's just a difference in wiring or whatever, but I'm leery of a middle-aged man who's kind of getting super pumped about anything anymore. You know what I mean? And
you see
these guys in the church business all the time, and these are like the, you know, your big time kind of shellacked, plasticky church growth guys. They're all kind of like our age or older, and they're still super pumped about things. And I have a real disdain and I guess like, I'm not finding the word, but I guess a lack of trust with people like that. What do you think, man?
I totally agree, man. I mean, I love the shellacked image of that pastor that's 60. He looks 40. He's too dark. His hair's too cool.
Yeah.
His clothing is like, I'm like describing myself right now, except I'm not 60, right?
Exactly. But he's still rocking like the H&M jacket, you know, and it's,
but like, it's all too slick, right?
It's very much too slick. Yeah.
Every time he puts on an outfit, it's one that he just bought yesterday.
Absolutely. It still has the creases in it from the mall, you know.
Right. It's nothing that he's like still wearing 10 years from now because it's faded and just kind of jacked up and everything.
Yeah.
But I totally understand that, man. I think the difference is that you've come from a background where at some point in your life, like the second half of your life has been, you've immersed yourself in like basically the arts.
Yeah.
And so like for you, like just buying another apartment to like fix up and then rent out and then act like, man, I've become a mogul. I've become like a real estate mogul now. That's yeah. really what I've been dreaming of, is to be a real estate mogul.
Right.
I mean, for you, it's just, it's not really that. It even goes back to what we talked about a couple weeks ago, where you're like, man, I'm not sure if I want to write right now, but really what I'm enjoying is doing graphic novels. So everything that you're thinking about is sort of generated through like, in like you trying to do something artistic.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I think that's just that's a difference, right? Yeah. Is because the things that you want to do are not necessarily going to put like a ton of money in the bank account, although potentially they could. You just don't know.
Dude, right.
But
right.
That's not really why you're going after it. You're going after it because you're looking to contribute something of your artistic expression.
Yeah.
And so it's just, dude, it's such a different mentality though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
People are wired so different, man. It's
totally.
It's kind of amazing. And it's like, I talk to some of these guys sometimes and I'm like, we're technically both men and we go to the same church and we live in the same town, but like we couldn't be more different, you know?
Totally.
We literally couldn't be more different.
But it's kind of motivated but the other thing too is like most artists, and let's just call ourselves artists, whatever okay. type wants yeah. to say, whatever, just for fun.
We can be comfortable with it in this space.
Creative yeah. types. Yeah. Let's just say that. So yeah, so as creative types, we're not necessarily thinking about everything we can do to make a buck.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's like true. Everything, right. So in other words, we're not like the sort of the end game in all of our scheming, dreaming, planning and hoping is not like, hey, guess what? I bought properties, I got a boat, I made an investment.
Yeah.
Like I started 7 new businesses.
Yeah.
You know, all that kind of stuff. I mean, there's a part of us that kind of delves into that, but it's almost mm-hmm. through an artistic lens, which means we're already forcing limitations upon us.
Yeah. Yeah.
In a weird way.
Yeah. I think ultimately, like, and tell me if this resonates with you, but I'm almost 100% sure it does, just based on like the way you've made your music and stuff over the years. But like my chief goal with almost any endeavor is just to be pleased. Like, I want to be pleased, yeah. you know, like I want the process of making it to be pleasing. I want the listener or the reader to be pleased when they're done. And I think that's so often like it's at odds with the kind of high octane dreaming that I see a lot of like middle-aged dudes using to like prop themselves up. You know, I mean, totally. They're going to the seminars, they're listening to the Gary Vaynerchuk. They're like, they're doing the pump up stuff, but like, I don't know. That just doesn't work for me. And to be fair, like I kind of want it to work for me. Like I want an entree into that world of like people who make yeah. money, but like yeah. I just can never seem to like focus my attention on it long enough to make it work. You know?
No, here's the thing. Like you're like me though, Big T. Like you wouldn't mind, you know, a couple extra dollars. You know,
I wouldn't mind.
Nobody's opposed.
Wouldn't
right?
mind.
Not opposed.
Yeah,
but it has to be on your terms,
dude. And that's the thing. That's always
that's
the sticking
the problem.
Point. You know, it's
that's
always the problem.
There's the rub.
There's the rub.
It's like so. I've always said that. It's like no. Like whatever. A little more of this. A little more of that. Okay. Yeah. But like, dude, I have to be able to do it the way I want to do it.
Yeah.
To get there.
Yep.
And it's not like I never make compromises. I'm not one of those purists either.
Dude,
I'm
no.
just simply saying like I can't go so far into doing something that has nothing to do or doesn't even resemble who I am.
Yeah. Yeah,
it
no,
still
I know.
Has to be kind of it still has to be part and parcel of like who I am.
It's got to have your signature on it like somehow, you know.
Right, exactly, because you know that if you were even to be successful with something that didn't resemble you, you wouldn't even want to do it after. Like you'd be done with it.
Yeah.
So quickly.
You wouldn't want to see it on your shelf, you wouldn't want to pick it up and read it.
Because you'd be over like the success of it, whatever kind of success it would bring,
yeah.
you would get over that real fast if you looked at it and you just go, "Well, dude, I don't even know what I'm looking. I don't even know what I'm doing."
Yeah.
You know,
dude. So let's. I've only got a few more minutes, and I know you've got just a few more minutes too. So let's do a little rapid fire nostalgia. I'm gonna throw out a decade, and I want you to name like a thing or two from each decade that like pleases you and like does it for you nostalgically. It could be an article of clothing. It could be a show. It could be a movie. It could be
yeah, for sure.
a record. Whatever.
Yeah, for sure.
Let's start with. Let's start simple. Let's go. Well, you know what. You're a little bit older than me, and we both lived in this decade a little bit. Let's start with the 70s.
Yeah.
I didn't as a sentient being experience a whole lot of the 70s, but I've grown to appreciate it kind of in the like the afterglow. So
totally.
let's go 70s, man. What is it for you?
So all through the 70s, I mean, I was a little kid,
yeah.
But I was, so what I wore in the 70s, what I remember is I wore bootcut Levi corduroys.
There you go.
And,
yep.
And dude, I had all the different colors. I had greens, yellows, tans, browns,
outstanding.
Blues.
Outstanding.
And I wore towards the late 80s and 90s, they started re-releasing those things. So I wore those. I brought them back, and I remember just loving them because,
yeah.
It was one of those nostalgic things. But that's one of the things I think about in the 70s. And then riding my my Schwinn Stingray.
Yep.
My green Schwinn Stingray. That's it right there.
Yeah, dude. The old timey bikes.
Yeah, with the banana seat in the back.
Absolutely.
And the whole deal.
Yeah, and not having to be all worried about whether or not it made you look tough. You know, like.
Well, there's none of that. I mean, yeah. At least where I was from, it was just like that's what you had.
Yeah.
And everybody had it.
Yep.
And it was just.
Yep.
Yeah. It was before you were thinking in those terms. Right. I was too young to think. In those, it was preteen, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah. When life was real simple, man, real simple.
Now, what was it for you in the 70s, baby?
Dude, for the 70s, just because I didn't experience it a whole lot, I think it's AstroTurf, right?
Oh, dude, that's so funny.
Yeah, so it's like the old school carpet that they used to play football and baseball on, and it just rips your body to pieces, right? Like I played on it some in high school and beyond, and like. Some of the arena football and stuff I played on the AstroTurf, and it just destroys your body, but it looks so good on television. And
it does. It looks fantastic. It's what grass dreams of being.
Dude, right. It was this incredible like invention of the 70s, like right when color television was popping and right when like league executives were more concerned with like looking good on television than player safety. And I see those games from the 70s and I see that turf and I'm just like, man, this stuff looks... It looks so cool now.
It looks incredible.
It looks incredible. It really looks incredible.
Baby, where did it come from? Does it have anything to do with like the Houston Astros?
It does, man. It was debuted, I believe, in the Astrodome.
So that's where it came from.
Yeah, it was like this whole futuristic approach to like...
Dude, I kind of thought that's where it came from.
Yeah, we're gonna play sports indoors. We're going to make this
like,
fake
this
grass.
This is the future. We never have to take care of a lawn.
Dude, that's
again.
Right. This is the future. And I'm sure the makers of AstroTurf were just like, this stuff's going to be in every lawn in America.
Every lawn and every stadium.
Every kid's going to be playing catch with his dad on AstroTurf, you know what
absolutely.
I mean?
We're going to have it everywhere. We're going to have it in houses.
Oh, absolutely.
It's going to be at the bottom of our showers. Like, everything is AstroTurf.
Dude, right. And I would have that house, man. If it were up to me, I would have AstroTurf and like... Almost every square inch of my house.
Oh, dude, I love it. Yeah. I literally love it, man.
Dude, let's go to the 80s. What is it for you, 80s-wise, nostalgia-wise? Fire away.
Yeah, so this is what it is for me, baby, and we are going to have so much beautiful agreement on this. Mm. I can't wait.
Lay it on me.
But for me, this is the 80s for me.
Okay.
Friday night at a mall,
oh.
The smell of popcorn,
oh.
There's a theater in the mall.
Yeah.
Tears for Fears is playing like over
yep.
whatever sound system they have just like emanating through the entire mall.
Yeah.
And you're just sitting there just getting like drunk on like candy
yep.
and like in soda. You're
dude, video
to
games, maybe hit the little arcade for
you
a few minutes.
You have the little arcade, man. So you're playing Tron with
yeah.
all of your buddies.
Yeah.
And it's just, I mean, that was it for me, man.
Dude, how about the
smell, yeah.
How about the mall being like the social nerve center of a place? You know, like
oh,
that.
Totally.
That whole
Absolutely.
Motif is gone, man. That's a thing our kids do not understand at all.
They don't. And in fact, when they go, like when you go into like a retro-y mall, it's mm-hmm. almost like they're standing around going like, why does anybody want to be here?
Yeah. Like, what are we doing? We could get
like,
all this stuff online,
here?
You know?
Or there's that outdoor mall that's like, we're outside and it's so much better. And it's like, yeah, but... The whole thing was just, it was like a world that was created for you.
Dude, it was
like
a whole magical like a world where you might come out of there with a new shirt. You might come out of it with a girl's phone number. You're going to see a little beautiful baby movie.
Absolute.
Yeah, the mall was a, yeah, in like you would go with your friends and you would have these experiences, you know, like,
yes.
And you'd have some stories to tell at the end of it.
It felt you felt at home.
Yeah.
It was like everything that was good and right in the world. I don't know. It was encapsulated at like the mall.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Okay, dude. One for me from the 80s. And this, we could go for a long time on this and I won't, but like just in general, the idea of like network TV.
Oh, for sure.
The idea of like you get four channels. There's only a couple NFL games every weekend. like you have to be there when the thing is on in order to see the thing, or else you're
not
seeing
it.
It
gave you so much to look forward to. Like every Monday night, like this comes on.
Dude, it gave you so much to look forward to, and it also alleviated, and tell me if this is a thing you can relate to, it alleviated the stress of like feeling like you constantly have to catch up, right? So at any given time now, there's like four shows that we're watching, and we're really not going fast enough to ever finish them. And there's always this gnawing sense of like, oh, I'd really love to have some hours just to catch up on this or to watch some ball games that I missed from the weekend or whatever. But the reality is you're never going to do it, you know.
And then when you would miss a show, you just missed it.
You just missed it.
That's just what it is.
Yeah, and people are talking about it and you missed it, but it's like, you know what, that's fine. You didn't have this existential moment of like, yeah, if I like orient my week correctly, I can squeeze that in at like 11 p.m. I can just watch it real quick, you know.
But baby, this is what I loved because we were in school. Like I loved having things to look forward to.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was because of the exclusivity of them. Like,
that's right.
I couldn't just see it tomorrow or the next day. Like you had to be there at that particular hour.
Everything was an event, you know, in a way that it's not anymore.
You can just create any event, any time, because everything's available. The availability of it has knocked out the specialness of
it. Dude, like a record dropping was an event.
Oh, dude, 100%. Yeah.
Listening to music back then was so not stressful because it was always like, if I didn't get to hear a song I liked, it was the radio guy's fault. Like, it wasn't my fault. You know what I mean?
Well, dude, you would just have to wait for them to play the song, and then when it came on, it almost felt like Christmas morning. It's like, oh, yes, they're playing that song.
Dude, absolutely, dude. And I would, like, tape them off the boombox, you know, the whole deal. And, you know, now it's like, in kids, I think our kids, like my kids, they don't appreciate this fully, but, like, it's stressful to me to have literally every song ever made on YouTube, and I can listen whenever I want. Because
you don't even know what to choose.
I don't know where to start. I don't know what to choose. Yeah. It's too many choices. What if I choose the wrong thing? You know, like it's just a massive weight of responsibility that I don't want to live with. Okay, the 90s, baby.
Oh, dude.
Lay some 90s nostalgia on me.
Man, I'm not a big... I know you're a way bigger 90s nostalgia guy than I am.
Yeah, I love the 90s. Love the 90s.
Why don't you go?
Well, baby, I'm gonna do one that's gonna get you started, maybe, and it's the movie Swingers.
Oh.
Swingers, kind of the seminal for me, like independent film of the 90s, and it was that VHS moment, like that moment of like somebody says that you should rent Swingers, you rent it, you've never heard of it, it's this tiny budget movie with nobody in it at the time, and you watch it, and you're just like, oh my gosh, they nailed it, right? Like that's.
Like, that was it.
That's it. That's what we sound like. That's how people are. It was just this really authentic, funny movie that you got the joy of discovering in the late 90s. That's a big one. My 90s ones, a lot of them are movies or music. You've Got Mail dropped in the 90s. That was a big one for me and KK. Gosh, man, I'm blanking. There's a whole bunch of them. But yeah, just the whole 90s aesthetic, I think it's funny, and this is going to sound terrible, and I'm going to do a bad job at explaining it. But like college kids now, like they care about everything, and it's almost crippling to have to care about everything. So they're super stressed, right?
Totally.
But they're
totally.
All quote unquote activists. You know, like every dude is a feminist. Now, like, and they're all kind of waving that around, and they're using it as a persona piece, and it's exhausting for them because, as a result of being a feminist and a vegetarian and super political and like all these things that they have to be all the time, it's just exhausting. And like part of the aesthetic of the 90s was not caring, so really all we had to do is just sit around on a couch and kind of wait to hang out. You know, the 90s was all about hanging out. Like, where are we going to hang out? What are we going to do when we're hanging out? You know, and 2019 is kind of all about, you know, persona building. And it just seems really stressful to me.
No, totally. I mean, the feminist thing is so funny, man. It's like,
oh, it's great,
I have to be a feminist to get a girl, which is kind of the anti-feminist
thing. Oh, for sure. Like, in order to be the kind of dirtbag that I want to be, I have to call myself a feminist. I mean, it's the most ironic thing imaginable that they don't see the irony in it. It's really amazing.
Yeah, no, none.
Yeah.
Yeah, none. No, man, the 90s, yeah, I mean, Swingers is definitely there for me, for sure. I was on the road a lot, so I kind of started all my touring stuff in the 90s. So for me, it represents... I'll tell you what it represents for me. Check this out, man.
Yeah.
It represents bookstores, Borders Books.
Ooh, yeah.
I know Barnes and Nobles is still around, but like all Borders and some of those other bookstores that were in existence.
B. Dalton Booksellers in the mall.
B. Dalton's. Yeah. There's a few others, but it reminds me of just hanging out for hours.
Yep.
At bookstores that also had music.
Yeah.
And man, you're just drinking coffee, you're reading through all the magazines. And so that was that informed so much of our time on the road.
Yeah.
We didn't have a lot of time, but we had an extra hour. That's just where we'd hang out.
Dude, reading, shopping, everything was so communal back then. Even like music shopping, you had the little stations in the music stores where you could like demo the CDs. And
isn't that funny that this is all pre Napster, right?
Dude, everything was very communal. Yeah. And now, like, nothing is communal. So now,
well, yeah, it was communal because it's like when coffee shops like came into like the forefront.
Dude, the
'90s
invented coffee.
Like, yeah, Starbucks came out and it was like, oh, that's what we're gonna do. We're gonna hang out at a coffee shop now.
Dude, do you think shows like Friends like started coffee, or do you think coffee was a thing before that?
I mean, I think that rooted out of it. You know what I mean? I think that show kind of came out of that, the culture that had already existed. But yeah, it kind of gave everybody like a snapshot of like, we don't really have to do, like, this is what we're doing.
Yeah.
Doing what we're doing is hanging out.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Hanging out is that's the end game.
That's the justification.
People do not do that anymore. You know, it's like, I'm going to the coffee shop to study, or I'm going to like, I don't know, play.
Yeah, it's become so functional, hasn't it?
It's so... everything is functional, man. These kids of 2019, like, they're very task-oriented. I don't think they're any more productive than we were, but they're just more stressed. Like, they're super hyped up.
I mean, you could
up.
Argue they're way less productive because we didn't have even a quarter of the distractions they have for getting
that's
things
true.
Done.
Yeah, you know yeah, I mean? That's true. That's true.
Yeah, they're just battling the elements with that.
They are, man. They're hacking through the weeds, you know? God bless them, man. I wish them the best, but...
I know it's a weird world. They're hungry for the things we experienced.
Dude, they are. They love it when
in the '80s, and I know.
Dude, when I come to class and I kind of want to kill time and I'm not really feeling it, they're like, "Tell us some stories about the '90s, Cluck." You know, and they love it. They love hearing the stories.
Grandpa Cluck.
Grandpa
I love
Cluck,
it,
dude. I fully embrace that role. I'm all in 100% on that role. I love it. Baby, this has been a blast, man. It's fun.
It's been great, man. It's been nostalgic.
It's fun to talk about the past
dare
with
I say.
You, baby. And I've enjoyed it. It'll be good to get Pipe back on the program. Speaking
Absolutely.
Of the past, Piper went to my parents' church this Sunday. So
what?
Yeah, so he got to like chop it up with my folks, which is kind of funny.
No
it's
doubt.
Like 6 degrees of evangelical separation, man. Everybody knows everybody. But,
yeah, totally, man.
But yeah, just fun stuff, baby. So I'm gonna say that we have wandered to and fro. Throughout these topics. And until next time.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
Have you ever felt conflict between your faith and feelings? If so, you're not alone. My name's Carly Mercouillier. I'm a licensed therapist and the host of the Therapy and Theology podcast, where we explore popular topics and questions related to faith, feelings, and spiritual formation. I want to invite you to join me every Thursday as we fearlessly name the complexities of our reality, grow in the awareness of who we are, and rediscover the power and purpose of our unique stories through the lens of the gospel. Subscribe today at lifeaudio.com.